Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, Ma'ihotep, to everyone. Welcome to this special edition of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. Every year, we do our best to make certain that we recognize the work of our freedom-fighting ancestors. And so this special edition of New Day tonight is to do that, and also to help not only elevate the spirit and the work of this great ancestor known as Stephen Bantu Biko, but also to make certain that those who maybe are not familiar with him do indeed become a little more familiar with him, and hopefully we'll be able to embrace the work so that we can continue on with all of what he contributed, his visions, his ideals, and particularly when we talk about Black consciousness. And of course, we hear a lot of that nowadays in our communities, but sometimes it gets a little off track, off course for some. At least that sometimes seems to be the perception. Well, tonight after we listen a little bit to Stephen Biko, certainly we will get a better idea, at least for some of us, what Black consciousness does in fact mean in the context of it representing a mentality, in the context of it standing for something more than just some cliches or a rap, but certainly a position, a political and a spiritual position. So while some kind of believe that Black is, well, or it isn't, whichever you prefer. Clearly, with Stephen Biko, he gives you a really, really good idea as to what Black means to many of us, including himself. In South Africa, he was known as the father of Black consciousness. Why? Why would Stephen Biko, born in South Africa, Azania, why would he be called the father of Black consciousness? He could have been called the father of many things. He could have been called the father of modern African consciousness, but no. He was known as the father of Black consciousness. He was inspired by many Black folks here in the U.S. We're going to hear a few words of Stephen Biko. And as a matter of fact, what you're going to hear is a recording that took place in August of 1977, just a few weeks before his assassination, his murder. He was, of course, brutally murdered. He was taken by the South African police, tortured, and then ultimately, of course, killed. Stephen Biko was born on this day, December 18, 1946. He was assassinated on September 12, 1977. Again, we're talking about doing a very critical time period of what was known as apartheid. White supremacy white supremacy truly, truly in the clear midst of things. Not subtle, not hidden, not overt, or shall we say covert, definitely right up in your face. And there were many brave, courageous African people in the continent who certainly fought for freedom. Stephen Biko, at the age of 30 years old, was one of them, as with many. But again, it is important that we connect those Black dots, because Stephen Biko was, in fact, inspired by Malcolm X, the Honorable Marcus Garvey, even Dr. King. This is why it was said that he was considered to be the father of Black consciousness in South Africa, because many of the things that people were saying here, Kwame Ture and others, He heard those words. He felt the spirit. And as a result, he himself moved forward to fight. I'm going to read some of the quotes of Stephen Biko very soon after we hear some of his actual words to kind of give you an idea as to what type of struggle, what type of vision, what type of fervor did he have, did he represent? That fire in our students. And note, he was 30, so we weren't talking about just the youth that many of us talk about in this location when we refer to youth. You know, that's a whole nother discussion that we've got to get into, because our students, our so-called youth, have been or are being exploited. And at some point, we have to call that out the way it is as well, that in a struggle, in a war, all hands on deck, period. But at any rate, here's some words from Stephen Bantu Biko.
After 1963-64, if you remember this year, there were many arrests in this country, which stemmed from underground activities by PAC, by ANC, and this led to some kind of political emasculation of the black population especially. With the result that there was no participation by blacks in the articulation of their own aspirations. The whole opposition to what the government was doing to blacks came in fact from white organizations, mainly student groups like NUSAS, the Liberal Party, the Progressive Party, and blacks who were articulated in any sense were far few by comparison to the olden days. And they were dispersed amongst these particular organizations. Now, when I came to varsity, which was sometime in 1966, in my own analysis and that of my friends, there was some kind of anomaly in the situation where whites were in fact the main participants in our oppression, and at the same time the main participants in the opposition to that oppression. It implies, therefore, that at no stage in this country were blacks throwing in their lot in the shift of political opinion. The arena was totally controlled by whites in what we called totality of white power at the time. So we argued that any changes which are to come can only come as a result of a program worked out by black people. And for black people to be able to work out a program, they need to defeat the one main element in politics which was working against them, and this was a psychological feeling of inferiority which was deliberately cultivated by the system. So equally too, the whites, in order to be able to listen to blacks, needed to defeat the one problem which they had, which was one of superiority. Now, the only way to come about this, of course, was to look anew at the black man in terms of what it is in him that is lending him to denigration so easily. So, first of all, we said as black students, we could not participate in multiracial organizations, which were by far white organizations, because in this country there is an overwhelming number of white students at university. And secondly, these organizations were concentrating mainly on problems which were affecting the white student community. And thirdly, of course, when it came to political questions, they were far more articulate than the average black students because of their superior training. And because of their numbers, they could outvote us on any one issue, which meant that NUSAS as an organization gave political opinions which were largely affected by the whiteness of that particular organization. So then in 1968, we started forming what is now called SASO, the South African Students Organization, which was firmly based on black consciousness, the essence of which was for the black man to elevate his own position by positively looking at those value systems that make him distinctively a man in society. First of all, we were of the view that this particular country is almost like an island of Europe in Africa. If you go throughout the whole of Africa, you do find aspects of African life which are culturally elevated throughout the continent. But in this particular country, somehow, any visitor who comes here tends to be made to believe almost that he is in Europe. He never sees black except in a subservient role. And this is all because of the cultural dominance of the particular group which is now in power.
But to what extent have you been successful?
Well, we've been successful to the extent that we have diminished the element of fear in the minds of black people. In the period, 63, 64, 65, 66, black people were terribly scared of involvement in politics. The universities were putting out no useful leadership to the black people because everybody found it more comfortable to lose himself in a particular profession to make money. But since those days, black students have seen their role as being primarily to prepare themselves for leadership roles in the various facets of the black community. And through our political articulation of the aspirations of the black people, many black people have come to appreciate, in fact, the need to stand up and be counted against the system. There is far more political talk now, far more political debate, and far more condemnation of the system from average black people than there have ever been since possibly 1960 and before. I'm referring here to the whole oppressive education system that the students are talking about. And after complaining about this, police, in fact the government, wants to further entrench what the students are protesting about by bringing in police and Saracens and dogs and almost soldiers, so to speak. Now, the response of the students then was in terms of their pride. They were not supposed to be cowed down, even at the point of a gun. And hence, what happened, happened. Some people were killed, and this riot just continued and continued. Because at no stage were the young students, nor for that matter, at some stage their parents, prepared to be scared. Now, everybody saw this as a deliberate act of oppressive measures, you know, to try and cow down the black masses, and everybody was determined equally to say to the police, to say to the government, we shall not be scared, you know, by your police, by your dogs, and by your soldiers.
Okay. That, of course, was one of the rare interviews that is available with Stephen Biko. Again, that was 1977, August, and of course he was murdered in September of 1977. Again, it is so important that we hear his voice. It is so important that we hear his thoughts. And isn't it so very interesting that some of what he said is happening right now? It was happening then in South Africa. It was happening here in the United States. But what is happening right now? Well, it sounds very much like South Africa here as well, particularly as we now hear about the increase in law enforcement and soldiering and things of that nature, the military visibility in our communities. And while, again, it's not as blatant as it may have been, it's certainly more sophisticated. The other thing that Stephen Biko spoke about was fear. This seems to be something that is, you know, all across the board when we look at liberation, that fear factor, and the role that it plays in impeding progress or the development of real struggle. But he also mentioned something else that we are so familiar with here, and that is that people tend to find, if not comfort, an escape by placing themselves into a more so-called professional arena, or what have you. And, of course, to make money. Well, we certainly see that very much today as well. So, at any rate, we wanted to raise some questions, and those questions are kind of in the context of, you know, who represents black people, African people today here in the U.S.? When we talk about Stephen Biko, certainly it was very clear what his position is, and at some other time we will play more of that particular interview. It's approximately 22 minutes in length, but and very clear, very in-depth, very much to the point. But again, the question has to be, who is representing African people, black people here in the U.S. as it pertains to black consciousness, as it pertains to really standing up and fight? A few years ago, we could, of course, give a few names: Dr. Khalid Muhammad, Steve Coakley, Aishaka Musa Barashango. I mean, there were several. I mean, even Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. You know, definitely we were able to say, certainly, you know, quite quickly, who are some that fight for us today, either with their scholarly work, with their actual activism, etc. And so we're going to ask that question now to you. Who do you think represents, in that spirit of Stephen Biko, who represents us today? So we're going to go to the lines for a minute, and this is not going to be a long session tonight. We just wanted to do what we do, and that is when it's time for our ancestors, some of our ancestors, their Earth Day or their Transition Day, we like them to do what we feel is the responsible thing, and that is to give them the type of props, the type of hailing up that is so important. You know, coming from an African perspective, this is also how some of us are able to become a little more strengthened. At any rate, let's go to our live line and let's see who we have in queue. And again, we're going to raise some questions. What does it mean? What does black consciousness mean to you? How can we apply it today in the 21st century? Those are a couple of the questions. And who is it, as I said, that stands up unapologetically for real freedom and justice for black people here in the U.S. today? Who are our freedom fighters, our heroes and sheroes today? So we're going to go to our caller at 7285. And 7285, your mic is open. Welcome to this segment, A New Day.
Greetings, Sister Liz in the house.
All right. Yes. Were you able to hear Stephen Biko?
Yes, I did hear the
great
message. So, and to be honest, I can't even think of anyone in that context, except for the people who I've met already, which would be yourself, myself, Brother Fred Hampton Jr., and others that I have been introduced to that are actually trying to fight the fight for our people, you know.
Yes.
But, I mean, what's going on now? I mean, we really don't have anybody who's really, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's visible, that people can kind of say, oh, okay. And that's like comic kind of, I'm not even saying, oh, okay, but actually really rallying behind, right?
Right.
I mean, we're here. We're here. We're doing it.
Yeah.
But then, but the mentality right now of our people is just not, they're not grasping it. So that's what I got out of that.
Yeah. You know, it's really
sad almost, you know, to mm-hmm. hear Stephen Biko's words and to kind of, you know, look at that period in time to see where South Africa is now, of course. And I'm really kind of pleased with some of what I'm seeing right now, because it seems like they really are ready to move forward, particularly with securing the land, you know. I think it's important that we understand that while many, of course, you know, talk about Nelson Mandela and the presidency and all of that, you know, there are some truths I think that at some point will have to be really told. And it is, but I think to a greater extent, the comprehension of some of what also happened to maybe undercut, you know, some other things that were going on or that was in the makings. And so, you know, Stephen Biko was considered to be more radical. And that's why, again, I keep pointing out that Black consciousness piece. That's the only one that I can recall that they really, and that he spoke about it. As you read his, you know, writings and, you know, review some of the speeches that he had and some of the other things, you constantly hear Black consciousness. And I mean, he says it explicitly clear, and he talks about it. And like I said, I'm going to read a few of his quotes a little later on that really, again, addresses what Black consciousness is, you know, at least from his perspective. And he talks about how it's a mindset and it's a way of life, you see. And so, you know, when you have people that embrace, you know, our comprehension of our people and our struggle to that degree, then it really changes the impact that you can have in whatever work that you're doing. When you really grasp and understand those kinds of essences of our people, and again, Stephen Biko certainly was one that did so. We have another caller, and so Sister Liz, I want you to stay right there. We're going to bring another caller in and get their opinion. And caller, you are at 0246. Your line is open, and welcome to this special edition of New Day.
Greetings, Empress Sister Angela from Cleveland on the live line. Thanks for taking my call. Hey.
Oh, definitely.
I missed the excerpt from Steve Biko, but I did want to chime in on the conversation about Black consciousness and who, you know, today is bringing forth that spirit. And I heard Sister Leah said, you know, besides yourself and Brother Fred Hansen, and she may have mentioned one more person that she couldn't really point to anyone, but I've been following some people, and I don't know if they come in exactly like Steve Biko, but I will say that their work, I think, exemplifies a level of Black consciousness. And some of the people I would name is Brother Julius Malema, for one, the leader of the Economic Freedom Fighters.
Yes!
He is out on the forefront. There's a little bit of question about his position on some of the LGBT stuff that has to be looked at, but
overall,
in general, you know, he's bringing it, and he's bringing it here.
Another brother
is the PLO Lumumba. He's an older gentleman. They actually, I think they locked him out of coming into one of the countries because he was coming too much with an independent, you know, radical self-determination message. And so, I mean, I think he's out here doing it. Another brother you introduced me to a while ago was Kamal Kambone.
Yes.
Can't forget about him. You know, they might not be in the forefront as such, but, you know, I would say Baba Malimu Baruti is another brother. And some of our contemporaries, I mean, I would actually say Irritated Genie and the Straight Black Pride movement for, you know, this generation, they're out there, you know, and they're about that work.
You're right.
Some of the other is Brother Mike Graves, you know. Of course, you know, he's one of your colleagues. The brother Black Dot. I don't know if y'all familiar with Black Dot.
New York.
He's not a politician, so speak. You know, I got to give him his props. He's from the time I've been listening to him. He even brought his son up. They have a media, you know, what we call a new black media. And for all Umar's faults, I got to say Dr. Umar Johnson. He don't, I mean, whatever his personal stuff is, his message is consistent from Africa to Europe to back here. You know, he stays on point. There's a brother named Jason Black that I just got familiar with. He made The Race War. I went to go see his movie up in Detroit. Yep. And I guess he had did a couple other movies, 7 a.m. and Gentrify. And when I listen to him, he is, he raw, he has that spirit. I mean, he has the spirit. He, you know, he treats people a little, you know, his patience for people ain't that long. And if you got a, if you got a thin skin, then you might think he's a jerk and you won't want to follow him. But, I mean, when it comes out to the core of his message. And then also I got to say Brother Shamari out of Philly, you know, he is definitely bringing that spirit. I'm going to put Professor Griffin there for whatever his personal issues may be. I think that he, for the long haul, he has stayed, he stayed on code. And he still talks about putting together, you know, security. I don't know how much he's doing off the scene, but, you know, he's opened a lot of people's eyes to things. And even Brother Tariq Nasheed, I mean, for whatever his personal issues may be, I have to look at his work. I'm just going to go with his work. With Hidden Colors, the Hidden Colors and the 1804. That was such a big deal for our generation. I mean, because for me, I think that really has served as an educational tool, and I think that that work should be in the house of every black family. Cause even if you just, you know, focus on his work, I have to give him his props for putting out that work. That is a something that should be in our schools and everything. And then the last person I'm going to name that I could think of is it's a brother. His name is Dinus Amir. I don't know if you hear to him. He got the Black Uru channel. I don't know his whole personal thing, but I like his work. He, you know, is all over Africa. And he left his corporate job to go to Africa, another young brother. So it is some, I'm going to say some, even the red pill and the blue pillar. I mean, they are pretty consistent, you know what I'm saying? They got a real good foundation. So, you know, some of them we're labeling the new black media because people are moving off of the Roland Martins, the Jameel Hills, the Mark Lamont Hills. You know, they're not really, black people ain't really rocking with them, and they are moving towards people that are really speaking the truth. Now, I can't speak for their whole holistic package, but I will say that's a group, that group of people, I think they kind of on point and are kind of trying to change the paradigm for at least for our generation and some of the younger people who they have their attention.
All right. Go ahead, Sister Angela. Yeah, you hit quite a few on there. I think, though, it's important that we kind of clarify or differentiate kind of from a category standpoint, meaning we have folks that are putting out a lot of good information, right? So in that context and in that spirit of black consciousness, I definitely agree. But then we have to look at how many are actually out here in the streets, how many actually be amongst the people in terms of dealing with issues. So that too has to be examined a little closer, because when you look at, and again, we've been thrown into having to examine this past 50 years from the so-called black power, black consciousness from the 1960s up to now. And what we saw, which is different from now, is folks were literally doing things, you know, in the hood, so to speak. So it wasn't just on the internet, it wasn't just on the radio or what have you. It was literally walking the walk along with the talk. So we do have, so some of the people that you mentioned do that or have done that. But again, I think it's important that we do let people know that there is a slight difference here. And it could be what is kind of creating some of the imbalance as well, because when something jumps off in our community, in a lot of our cities, what ends up happening is there's a rah-rah about it for a minute, and then it's gone. Or it gets co-opted. So, for example, what happened in St. Louis, in Ferguson. You know, folks were serious. Mm. They were adamant. They were on point every day. Okay? Then after a while, things started dying down a bit. And then the next thing we know, of course, the usurpers came in, totally co-opted, and now you had this whole other thing.
which is totally different from what happened in St. Louis. So, you know, again, the question has to be, is, you know, the boots on the ground piece, who also, because like you said, Irritated Jean doing excellent work. Now, of course, there are components of Straight Black Pride that is definitely in the hood, in the street, in the community. Sister Keisha and others connected to that, they're definitely on point in the community. When that situation happened with Afrika Bambaataa, they did a press conference right in the community. See, and that's what we have to look at. Who is really just on the mic, writing the books, and all that's, you know, all that's relevant, all that's good. There's no question. It has its place. But again, we have to look at, you know, who's really representing, because when I talked about Dr. Khalid, we're talking about all across the board, from lecturing to teaching to getting out here in the street, in these streets. You know, when that situation happened with I think it was James Byrd in Texas, I mean, they went down there and really, you know, represented. So, you know, the question has to be now, who's standing up for our people today other than some rallies? You know, who is really about it? And I think it's really important that we examine, because as we've been talking for this past week, these people have they're upping their thing. They're getting ready to put some stuff in our community. By summertime, we're gonna have some serious stuff going on in our communities. And the question is going to be, who's going to be monitoring, asking questions, you know, doing whatever to try to keep these people from going to the degrees that, you know, we expect they're going to be going to, or at least attempting to. But you hit a lot of great people. Interestingly enough, I ain't hear no sisters up in there.
I know, right? I actually have two more brothers I wanted to add, but with the sisters, there's some sisters out here, you know, besides yourself, but I don't know if I follow them thoroughly enough to say their names other than Sister Keisha Forrester. Her name without any flinching, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
But some of the other sisters that were out here, for example, like Sister Zaza, I never really followed her. She had a following.
Right.
I thought she was cool. I don't know. But then she just had a scandal that happened recently.
Really?
There was she was having she had a retreat of some kind scheduled out in Phoenix or somewhere in Arizona, Sedona, Arizona, and she collected the people's money. It was like a, I don't know what kind of retreat, a Get Balanced Center, WUSA, whatever her thing is, you know, ladies go out and go in type of thing. And she had collected all the money, and I want to say 2 days before the retreat, before the actual date of the retreat, she canceled it. And, you know, people were complaining that they didn't get their money back. And I think eventually she did make everyone whole, I believe. But, you know, plane tickets have been booked. And when they found out that the venue, she had known 30 days ahead that the venue wasn't secure. So it just like it kind of put a little bit of a, you know, scar on her name, unfortunately. And hopefully the community or the sisters, whoever really follow her, will forgive her. You know what I mean? Because sometimes we are unforgiving of ourselves within the community. But, I mean, it's so fresh.
Absolutely.
It just happened within, like, the past 2 weeks.
Okay.
And so, and then there was another sister. She out here, she called herself Radical Goddess. I don't know if you hit to her. She talks about Fukushima.
No.
And she talks about, she's unapologetically black as well. I don't know how much, well, she's on the ground. But then she does a lot of critical critique of other black folks that's doing the work. And this is where I think we have to advance the conversation in two ways. One, like you said, there are people out here doing a lot of good work, sharing a lot of good information, but they may not necessarily be boots on the ground. And part of it, and it may, those two may not integrate or intersect at some point. It may be a matter of, you know, part of our work is connecting those dots. Because if you're putting out, if one segment is putting out good information that's going to help elevate the mindset, by all means, we should still have some level of support for that. But when it's time to get in the foxhole, of course, okay, that might be a different thing, you know what I'm saying? And then those are conversations
right.
that probably need to happen offline. But what tends
right,
to happen
right, right.
in these spaces is that if it's all or nothing for us, like either you all the way, boots
mm-hmm.
on the ground all the way in, or
mm-hmm.
you're not in.
Mm-hmm.
And so that
right.
is not a unifying situation.
Right, right,
so,
right. Yep.
I don't know. I think
we
how do we find a solution to that? But I didn't want to leave out Muta Baruka down there in Jamaica.
Oh yeah,
Stephen Razor,
oh, yeah.
he's thorough.
yeah,
and
yeah,
then of course
yeah,
Brother
no
Lee,
doubt.
Africa on the Move. You know, so
oh, yeah.
he is one of our yeah. freedom fighters. You know, that's really
absolutely.
Putting information out.
Absolutely, absolutely, and again, you know, it's going to be in our best interest to really. Identify, differentiate, or do whatever, just to keep things clear, because what has happened, unfortunately, because of the lack of clarity, we have these expectations sometimes of people, and that's not their field. That's not their area. You know, that's not what they're really trying to do. And so, you know, I think there's been clarity for a few, and people have kept it into perspective, like, say, for example, Brother Renoko Rashidi, you know, everyone pretty much sees him as being the scholar, the great scholar that he is, and don't try to put him, you know, anywhere else. He does a wonderful job there, and so, you know, that's where he should be, you see. And I think that's mm-hmm. kind of at some point as we proceed, we're going to have to really understand those dynamics and not expect, you know, unnecessarily, well, okay, they're doing this. Well, if that's the job or the work or what it is they're supposed to be doing, then we should support them in that manner, you see. But again, what has unfortunately happened because of this void, I think, that has occurred in these past 50 years, that you've got, you know, so many areas that's just not functioning. You know, it's just not happening. I mean, between COINTELPRO and the fakeism, you know, over these 50 years, meaning, you know, people getting into the movement and then after a while saying, okay, that was good, that was cute, had enough, let me go ahead on and, you know, do my other thing, and left it. You see, it was fun while I was, you know, while they were in it. And exciting, and then after a while they realized, oh, heck, this is really hard work. So they went on and did whatever. And so that's another analysis that we've been able to really uncover over these past years in terms of what happened. What happened with all the rah-rah and the da-da-da-da-da, the 1960s and the 1970s? How did all these folks end up in corporate America? For real, you know, coming out of that. And so, again, we know that COINTELPRO played a major role, but we also know that for some folks, it was a fad. Being black, being active, being down, and all that was a fad. And so, again, that void came about. So, you know, I think as we proceed, in fact, I know, I have real confidence in us. I know that, you know, we're going to move forward, we're going to get it together, and we're going to be able to put some of this stuff in perspective in the way that it needs. But as we've been talking, Sister Angela, and also, of course, with Sister Liz, we got to start filling in some of these areas because, again, you know, we're losing, or not losing, but several of our ancestors, several of our heroes and heroes are now ancestors. You see, mm-hmm. and so we've got to look at who's going to be carrying on that work for real. Because just like with Dr. Khalid, I dare say, who's going to carry that work? Who's carrying the work of Steve Coakley? Even though I think I might have sent both of you the book that I just got hold of. I hadn't gotten it yet. But we're going to have either the author and or the publisher on our program very soon. But there's a new book coming out on the Boule. So that should be very, very interesting because it seems pretty thorough. So it seems like, you know, somebody's picking up on the work of Steve Coakley. And I know Sister Keisha had Brother Steve Coakley's son on their program maybe a week or so ago.
So, you know, I haven't had a chance to talk to her about that, but hopefully, you know, he'll be continuing the work. But again, you know, Ashaka Musabara Shango, who's continuing that work? You know, who's continuing the work of Dr. Francis Quest Welsing? And so many others. So we've got to really look closer at how are we going to really start advancing, continuing the work that has already been laid down there for us, as well as, you know, bringing that work forward the way that it needs to be. I mean, it's a real challenge. There's no question. But, you know, I have confidence in us, to, you know, to say the least. Sister Liz, I'm hoping you wrote down some of these names that Sister Angela mentioned, because I'll be honest with you, I forgot about a few of them myself, and one or two I'm not familiar with. So I got to, you know,
that's a
check
whole
in.
List right there. Angela, if you could send me that list, I'd appreciate it so I could start tuning in.
Most definitely. I will.
Yes, yes. And it's true, like, you know, we have to start connecting these dots. Like, and, you know, so who's doing what, and they're, you know, like you said, if that's what they are doing, then we need to kind of support so we can all be on the same page doing, but coming together collectively so the work can get done.
Yes.
On a massive, you know.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yes, you know.
Actually,
yes,
I did overlook one sister that is just came on the scene not too long ago. I don't know if y'all hit to her. It was a little controversy around her a few months ago, but her name is Dr. Mumbi, Dr. Mumbi Seraki.
Oh,
and
yes.
She's out of Kenya. Yeah, she just left the U.S.
I like her.
Yes,
you're right.
Me too, yes. Yes, so I'm going to put her on there as a sister. She, you know, she came out of the background of the, I don't know if it was the World Bank or UN. She did all that,
her
education. But she's back in Kenya. She started her own media. And she's all about, her thing is building bridges. And she's specifically reaching out to African Americans to connect with Africans on the continent. So, I mean, I got to respect that. And so, yeah, I think that she's somebody we should connect with and, you know, really try to, you know, get behind and see if we can connect the black dots with her. She seemed like she's
absolutely.
For real.
Absolutely. Yeah, I like, I saw several of her videos. Definitely like her. Yes, that's a really good one, Sister Angela. No doubt, especially talking about sisters. So, yes, indeed. All right. Well, family, what we're going to do, as I said, this is just a brief session. I wanted to just make sure that we did what we try to do, as I indicated, when it comes to some of our ancestors. And so I'm just going to play a little bit more of the interview. Of course, you can go on YouTube. There's only a few speeches there with Stephen Biko, of course, and this is one of the best ones that I think you're going to find. This is his last speech, and it does make reference specifically to black consciousness in the South African Revolution. That is the title of that particular speech that you heard from him. And I'm going to play a few more minutes of that, and we're just going to fade it on out tonight again. Just wanted to put it in your consciousness and your thoughts, because he's certainly always in mind. There are just certain ancestors that I, you know, really kind of embrace on a day-to-day basis, and Stephen Biko is one of them. And by the way, family, next year we are planning to go to South Africa, so we'll be telling you more about that in the very near future as well. I want to thank Sister Angela for bringing that powerful information to us. Of course, Sister Liz, always in the house, and family, we thank all of you as well. Of course, we'll be doing our regular program on Saturday, at the same time that we normally do, 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And for those who are in the southern region, there will be a telephone conference call tomorrow night, 9 o'clock for the southern region time, 10 o'clock for the East Coast time, for those who want to participate in that. But it's geared to the southern region to get them ready for the We Charge Genocide program agenda. And if you want more information about that, you can just email us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com. All right, my sisters, I thank you again. Just want to say we love Stephen Biko. We love our South African family, a Zanian family, and certainly we love all of our ancestors who have stood for us, fought for us, died for us, many. And, of course, you know, we keep their spirit alive in doing the work that they, of course, started, and we have continued some of that work. All right, sisters, love you both, and we're going to leave out again with the words of Stephen Biko.
Now, this is the kind of lack of fear when I'm talking about, which I see as a very important determinant in political actions.
Since I was doing something like 400, now that's my cure.
499.
499. And you think that this will not be a deterrent?
No. I think it has been a very useful weapon in merging the young and the old. I mean, before then, there was obviously a difference in the outlook of the old generation to the younger generation. The younger generation was moving too fast for the old generation. The old generation was torn between boundaries and politics on one side, old allegiances, which were not progressive allegiances, you know, to groups like ANC, TAC, without any regard and action. And there were those who were simply too scared to move.
You condemn Bantustan leadership and leaders?
Yes, of course. We condemn Bantustan leaders, even the best of them, like
Yeah. So, just say a few words on that.
Well, our attitude here is that you cannot, in pursuing the aspirations of black people, operate from a platform which is meant for the oppression of the black people. Now, we see all these so-called Bantustan platforms as being deliberate creations by the nationalist government to contain the political aspiration of the black people and to give them pseudo-political platforms to direct their attention to. Now, men like Dr. Buthelezi, Matanzima, Mangope, and so on are all participants in the white man's game of holding the aspirations of the black people. Now, we do not feel it is possible in any way to turn such a platform to useful work. We believe the first principal step by any black political leader is to destroy such a platform and destroy it and, you know, without giving it any form of respectability. So once you step in it, once you participate in it, whether you are in the governing party or the opposition, you are in fact giving sanctity to it. You are giving respectability to it. So in essence, people like Dr. Buthelezi, like Matanzima, and like Mangope, are participants in a white man's game. And they are participants at the expense of the black man. And they are leading black people to a divided struggle, to speak as Zulus, to speak as Tosas, to speak as Zedi, which is a completely new feature in political life of black people in this country. We speak as one combined whole, directing ourselves to a common enemy. And we reject anyone who wishes to destroy that unity. Yeah, we are, as I was saying, of the view that we should operate as one united whole towards attainment of an egalitarian society for the whole of Tanzania. And therefore, any entrenchment of tribalistic, racialistic, or any form of sectional outlooks is abhorred by us. We hate it. And we seek to destroy it. And it is for this reason, therefore, that we cannot see any form of coalition with any of the Bantustan leaders, even the so-called best of them, like Dr. Buthelezi, because they destroy themselves by virtue of the kind of arguments that one has put up.
So the government, of course, also knows that all this unrest clearly is due to communist education. Are you a communist?
We have by no means communist. Neither do I believe for a moment that the unrest is due to communist agitation. I do know for a fact that there has been participation, it would appear anyway, from science, by a lot of people in the unrest. But the primary reason behind the unrest is simple lack of patience by the young folk with a government which is refusing to change. Refusing to change in the educational sphere, which is where they're directing themselves, and also refusing to change in a broader political situation.
Now, when these youngsters started with the protests, they were talking about Afrikaans, they were talking about funding education, and they meant that. But the government responded in a high-handed fashion, assuming, as the world is done, that they are in a situation of total power. But here, for once, they met a student group which was not prepared to be thrown around all the time. They decided to flex their muscle, and of course, the whole country responded, simply because I was still saying that there are lessons to be gleaned from this whole unjust situation of last year. In the first instance, I think blacks have flexed their muscle a bit, and they now know the degree of dedication that they can find amongst their own members when they are called to action. And they now know the kind of response they will get from the various segments of the population, the youth, the oldies, and so on. And the second lesson, of course, is the response from the government and the white population at large. The government responded in one way, and the white population also in another way. One doesn't want to get into details here, but, you know, reading newspapers, you get some kind of idea of the extent of fear that was prevalent in white society at a particular time, especially just after the first onslaught in Soweto, where there was a real fear throughout the community, throughout the country. Nobody knew just where something would happen next.
So how will these lessons express themselves in the future?
I'm of the view that any recurrence of disturbances of that nature can only result in more careful planning and better calculation, thereby achieving the desired results to a greater extent than the spontaneous situation we had last year, for instance.
And you believe that by these means you will bring about a real change of the society?
I see this as really an expression, one form of an expression of discontent inside. I'm of the view that the whole change process is going to be a protracted one in this country. It depends entirely on the degree to which the nationalist government is prepared to hold on to power. And my own analysis is that they are wanting to hold on to power and fight with their backs to the wall. Now, conflict could only be avoidable if they were prepared to avoid it. Those who are at the seeking end, that is, those who want justice, who want an egalitarian society, can only pursue their aspirations according to the resistance offered by the opposition. And if the opposition is prepared to fight with their best in the world, conflict can be avoidable. Now, we as the BPCI, I'm a member of the Black Conscious Movement. I was a member of BPC before I was banned, and now I have been, I'm told, appointed as honorary president of BPC. Now, the line that BPC adopts is to explore as much as possible nonviolent means within the country, and that is why we exist. But there are people, and there are many people, who have despaired of the efficacy of nonviolence as an effort. They are of the view that the present nationalist government can only be unseated by people operating a military wing. I don't know if this is the final answer. I think in the end, there is going to be a totality of effect of a number of change agencies in operating in South Africa. I personally would like to see less groups. I'd like to see groups like ALC, PAC, and the Black Conscious Movement deciding to form one liberation group. And it is only, I think, when black people are so dedicated and so united in their cause that we can effect the greatest results. And whether this is going to be through the form of conflict or not will be dictated by the future. I don't believe it.